Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Hey, Natalie. How are you?
Good, good. How about yourself?
Doing good. Can you pronounce your name? Because I don't want to butcher it if I'm doing the intro.
Of course. So it's just Natalie Lussier.
Lussier.
Yes, you got
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah, because I seen it. You actually had a pronunciation thing, but I was still confused when I was on the website.
No worries. It's all good.
So you're from Canada?
Yeah, I'm from Canada, but I'm living in Texas right now.
Texas? I hope you're saying Austin, Texas.
I'm actually in Dallas. Austin was the obvious choice, but we decided to go for a little more outside the city and that kind of thing.
From Canada to Texas. How do you feel about that change?
It's pretty good. I mean, the weather is beautiful. Just, you know, lots of snow versus lots of sun. So that part's been great.
I'm thinking about the people-wise, the southern Texas people-wise.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been an adjustment. But we have friends that we knew in this area already. So that kind of helped transition too. But yeah, we're definitely meeting new people. And yeah, people definitely ask us, like, which church do you go to? We're like, church. So yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's just when people tell me about Texas, I mean, I'm getting sold on Austin, but other parts of it, I visited Houston before, and I don't think I will ever come back again.
Oh, no? Interesting.
It just wasn't my thing. Coming from New York, in there, it was just right. too much of a difference. And that is the Bible Belt, right?
It is, totally, yeah, okay. For sure.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And you're a software engineer, too.
Yes, I am.
So you're like a unicorn. You're from Canada, and you're a woman software engineer. How does that happen?
Yeah, I just grew up in a really small town with nothing fun to do, so I had to learn programming, essentially.
I'm not buying that.
No, you're not? Okay.
I'm not buying that one. I've never heard anyone ever tell me, I grew up in a small town, so I had to do programming. Why did you get into it, really?
It was fun. Why?
Yeah.
So actually there were, what do you call them? So there's a lot of cartoons and Japanese animations that I liked when I was a kid. And, I found out that you could build your own websites. So I built websites about like my passions, which were like all these cartoons. And then I found other people online who were also building websites about the same cartoons. And I got to know them. And that's like, we taught each other new like HTML tricks and code and stuff like that. And then, eventually I ended up building my school's website. And then I went into software for my university degree.
Wow. Around which year was this when you started building up the first websites?
I was 12.
You were 12, but what year was it?
Yes. Oh, 19, probably like 90. Well, let me think. I can actually do the math. 97, 97, 98.
Okay, so that's the AOL days.
Yeah, totally. GeoCities.
Oh, wow.
Tripod, like all those. Yeah, Angel Fire.
I don't think most people using WordPress now realize how hard it was to build a website back then.
Totally, right? I know. It's a completely different world.
You still had to use the frames and just...
Yeah.
It was bad.
Old school.
It was really old school. So how did you go from that into building your own WordPress plugin? Because you do have one. It's Pop-Up Alley. And I just want to know a little bit about that and how you developed it, how much time it took, just some of the lessons you learned. It's interesting to me.
Yeah, of course. So there's a lot that kind of goes into that. But basically, my business was originally all about training people how to do stuff themselves technically. So, you know, it was all about getting techie with it. And I was teaching people how to build their own opt-ins and how to do some of that coding stuff. And a lot of times people would get stuck on the coding piece. And so I realized, well, it would be much easier if there was a plugin that actually did all the customization and the cool designs that people were looking for. And then they wouldn't need to learn how to code. And it would just be a much faster way to get there. And my business is actually doing so well that I was able to essentially retire my husband from his job. So nice. He joined my company, and then he's also a developer. So that kind of gave us the bandwidth to actually create software and for me to actually have time to market it and do all the, you know, customer research and all the stuff that goes into creating software. So that was our first plugin, Pop-Up Ally. And I'm happy to dive in more if there's anything specific.
I want to hear one of the biggest lessons that you've learned through that whole development process of the plugin.
Yeah, so I think that the biggest thing we learned, first of all, was that we released a free version first, and that gave us so much feedback. It taught us like what things were people were looking for and what things they didn't really care about. And then also it taught us about kind of how quickly we can release software and how to handle the bugs that might come in too. So releasing the free version also helped us because we put it in the WordPress directory. So we had a lot of downloads, and I think we're up to over 10,000 active users right now of the free version. So we knew that if we could get a percentage of these free users to upgrade to the paid version, then we might be able to get them, you know, to obviously purchase the premium version, and that would be like a viable business model. So that's why we created the premium version of the plugin. And a lot of the features came from what people who were using the free version said that they wanted more of. So that was like, we pretty much built what people were asking more than like what we thought would be cool.
Yeah, but how did you make that push initially going from free to paid? I know that's a pain point for a lot of WordPress plugin developers. It's how do I make people pay for this? It's been free for so long.
Yeah. So we had a couple of limitations on the free plugin. So one is that you only had two opt-ins or two pop-ups. And we realized definitely people wanted to have different opt-ins on different pages, different pop-ups for different occasions. You know, maybe it's a exit intent for a sales page versus an exit intent for the blog. So we realized like that would be a good way to get them to upgrade. But then we also figured out that we could do more templates, more customization, more mobile friendly options. And those were all things that also took more development time and more design. So that was actually a good thing too, because it gave people a chance to kind of explore more of the options that they were wanting, but that we just hadn't built into the free version. But then in terms of actually implementing those things, we put a little ad in the sidebar for the free version so people could click through and see what was available in the paid version. And we did a couple of different tests with that offer. And what we found is that, you know, sending people to a really long sales page with all the different features and all the different templates and options and stuff worked, but it was a little bit overwhelming and people didn't always see the value. So what we did instead was we did a $1 trial. So what people could do if they were in the free version, they could just pay a dollar, upgrade to the pro version, try it out. And if they like it, then we'll charge them the full price 21 days later. So they get to already, you know, install it, play with it, get to see if it's the right plugin for them and to see if the value is there for them before we actually charge their card. And that's been really, really effective. It increased our conversions from like, I think it was 1-2% up to 10%.
So you would say that 10% of the people that sign up for the free trials actually, I mean, not the free, but the $1 trial, they stay and pay for the premium.
Right. So basically, however many people who are on the free version who click that link, you know, on that page, how many of those?
I see. So that's the thing that increased. So out of those people, how many percentage-wise actually stay and pay the full price after the 1 month of the trial's over?
Yeah, I would say I have to look it up, but I think it's probably like 90 or 95. It's most of the people stay. We have very few people who backtrack and cancel.
That's very high.
Yeah, it's kind of impressive.
It is very impressive. you also mentioned that you want to talk about membership sites. So I would imagine that it's the sales funnels, the list building for membership sites.
The second plugin that we created is called Access Ally, which is all about membership sites for Infusionsoft and Entreport platforms.
So what does someone look out for when building a funnel for a membership site?
Yeah, well, one of the things that we've done really successfully that I think I recommend other people to try too is to build free courses and have people actually log into your members area to access free content, and then to show them what other paid things you've already created that they can upgrade to. And it's essentially doing like very low pressure organic sales within your members area. So you know, you've got somebody, you're giving them value. And this is very similar to what a lot of people do with their opt-ins, but just moving it inside the members area is a really interesting twist that I think kind of convinces people that, oh yeah, there's all these other courses I could be taking. There's all this other content I can unlock. And, you know, then it's just a kind of one-click upsell or a very simple upsell from a free course to a paid course. And we've actually done that with our 30-day list building challenge. So it's a free challenge. People sign up and they get one video unlocked every day for 30 days with a training on how to build your list and how to get more subscribers and more traffic to your website. And, you know, people go through this training and then they realize, okay, I'm getting all this great value. I wonder what else is in the paid courses. And we have courses that kind of go deeper in certain topics. So it kind of naturally, you know, brings people into our world, it gets them used to logging in, and then also shows them what else is available.
Are you using your own plugin for the list building?
Yes. So we're using Access Ally for that. And we actually developed it internally for ourselves first because there weren't any plugins that did what we wanted. And we were not originally planning to sell it. It was the first plugin that we built even before Pop-Up Ally. And we just used it for ourselves. And then people kept saying, you know, what are you using? What plugin are you using? So we realized, okay, there's definitely a need for this and people want to, you know, want to use what we're using. So then we rolled it out earlier this year.
That's interesting. So you actually give the whole course for free. Haven't you thought about doing like a $1 trial or can the people actually see the other courses inside too when they're first signing up for the list building?
Yeah, so basically how it works is that it's totally free. You get one video a day, but if you want to unlock all the days immediately, it's a $27 offer. So basically you could just say, you know, I'm keen. I want to go on the fast track. I want to do this faster. Let me just unlock everything. So, and we do get a percentage of people who sign up for the free offer and decide that they'd just rather go faster. And in terms of the other courses, they don't get to see the content of the other courses, but they get to see a little bit more information about them and they can click through to the sales page and get the full detail and kind of sign up information there.
Interesting. And then do you sell those courses one by one or is it like a bigger membership site where when you pay a monthly price, you unlock everything else?
Yeah. So right now we have kind of a yearly membership. So where somebody will sign up and they'll get access to every course that we have. And there's a new course released every quarter. And that's called our Heart Quarters Insider Program. And then we also have one course called Launch It and Profit, which is kind of a single module or kind of single program that people can also unlock individually.
So you charge annually. You don't have any monthly or quarterly payments?
That's right. We do have payment plans, but right now they are, you know, three or four payments. And the reason that we did it this way, and we're always experimenting, so this might not always be the case, but the reason we did it originally is because we wanted people to be in for the whole year. And I think if you make it monthly, then people will think, oh, I can just cancel anytime, which, you know, we might experiment with doing as well. But for right now, we wanted people who are in for the whole year. And there's some kind of coaching that happens every quarter, and there's small groups that people can kind of connect with and do accountability and kind of ask questions in and stuff. So that was kind of the idea, is to just form this group and, you know, people who are going to be there for the long term.
Very cool. What's the conversion like from people getting the free list building into the whole paid annual membership? Because that's quite a leap. You know, usually people talk about like small triggers and then these, you know, tripwires and things, but you're going straight from free to bam, like give me your wallet.
Yeah, you know, and I would say that actually the trajectory tends to be 30-day challenge to Pop-Up Ally Pro, just because that is more aligned with what the course teaches. And then we know we go into more list building. So people want, if they have WordPress, they'll probably use Pop-Up Ally Pro. But yeah, and then eventually they will go into our other courses. And it really depends. So for example, our Launch and Profit course, we used to run it once a year. Now it's available all the time as of this week. So it's brand new. We're just kind of testing the upsell process with that one. But yeah, for the Heart Quarters, it tends to be, you know, kind of sporadic. So we'll see, you know, a bunch of new people sign up if we get a big influx of people who join the challenge or somebody talks about it. So it hasn't been as easy as it was in the past. So actually before we had the whole yearly thing, we actually had individual courses that people could purchase and we could see very easily, you know, the upsell from there. But we're always testing. So we're going to be testing some smaller initial kind of trials like we did with the Pop-Up Ally too. So it's still early days for us on that side.
You mentioned the quarterly launch. So it seems like you're doing some kind of a push every quarter. Can you talk about that a little bit? What is that?
Yeah, so depending on what we're working on, we will do kind of a bigger promotion to our email list. So for example, we actually have a brand new plugin coming out in 2 weeks, which is called Webinar Ally. So that's kind of going to be our next kind of push or launch there. For Launch and Profit, that was something that we launched once a year or sometimes twice a year in the early days. And so that, again, is something that we just have a big promotion, whether it's webinars or, you know, a free video series or just more information about the topics that people can decide if it's the right program or offer for them. So yeah, depending on what it is that we're releasing, then we'll have kind of more of a promotional push for that item. And we do try to keep it manageable for our people and for ourselves and for our small team, because there does tend to be a lot of work that goes into actually doing a launch, you know, whether we're doing Facebook ads or guest posts or anything else around the topic that we're actually releasing for the product.
When it comes to membership sites, I usually don't see as much list building going on as with some of the other websites. Have you found a method that works pretty well across the board for someone that's trying to sell a course or a membership site on how they can build a mailing list?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that, I mean, all list building kind of comes down to how can you provide value and have a really good opt-in that people are loving so much that they'll actually share it for you. So in the case of our 30-day list building challenge, you know, because it's part of the membership site, people actually spread the word about it all the time. And we have, built-in share buttons inside the members area saying, hey, you know, I just joined the challenge or I just finished this day's video. And so it kind of socially builds in some of that credibility and social proof, but also, you know, sends new people towards the challenge. So that to me is really powerful. And you don't necessarily need to do that inside your membership site. So if you have just a regular opt-in, whether it's a PDF or a checklist or a video series or something else that you're giving away for free, you can have more of that social sharing built in on your thank you page after somebody consumes that content. And that tends to work really well, especially if it's high value. So one of the things that I like to say is, can you create something that's so good that people would pay for it, but then give it away for free? And that in itself is kind of a game changer, and it can really help build your list because people see that value and they're kind of floored by it. And then they're more likely to share it with their communities too. And then, of course, you know, there's the usual, you could do affiliate marketing, you can do Facebook ads, you could do other types of social ads like Pinterest or all that stuff. So it really kind of comes down to, I guess, what your skills and talents and interests are in terms of getting the word out to new people and new tribes and stuff like that. So you could do more podcast interviews, more guest posts, you can do more SEO, but all of that is really kind of secondary to how awesome your opt-in is going to be.
Yeah, you mentioned podcast interviews. It's not as easy as it seems to get people to listen to a podcast and then actually go to a website or a web page and then take any type of action. Just getting them from the point of listening to going to a website is not easy. Do you have any recommendations for that?
That's a great question. Yeah, so I have a podcast myself, and that's something we're always kind of experimenting with. I think the value, in my opinion, of a podcast is that you're in somebody's ears, right? So they're actually like listening to you, they get to know you, and that puts you top of mind. And usually that might not mean that they'll rush back to their computer and type in your URL and go and opt in right away. But the next time they need the thing that that person talked about, they're more likely to remember you and to maybe Google you or search for you. So I think that it's more of a brand building thing than necessarily a direct, you know, correlation between I listened to this episode and now I went to the website and opted in or, you know, bought something. So I think that there's kind of that other effect. And then one thing I've found to be definitely true is that if you show up on a lot of podcasts at the same time, it's kind of like a podcast blast, if you will, then people kind of recognize you a lot more and it really increases the authority that you have. So people are like, wow, I'm seeing this person everywhere. You know, Tom's everywhere. What's going on here? I have to really like find out more about him. Like he just burst onto the scene. And that tends to work even better. And then you're a lot more likely to get people to go back to your website at that point because you've kind of got this fascination effect starting.
Interesting. I've actually been so lazy about going on people's podcasts. Like,
well, because you have your own podcast, so you've got something going already.
Yeah, but you have your own too. And you're saying that this works really well, so... I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, but I think it has to be kind of a concerted effort. So you need to say like, okay, I'm going to go on like 10 podcasts and they're going to air fairly close to each other, you know, because most people listen to more than one podcast, right? So I think that tends to work better that way.
Yeah, I actually seen an article about someone with a podcast addiction and like their whole day is spent listening to podcasts.
I can see that actually, yeah.
You know, I actually barely listen to any podcasts. Like, since I started doing my own, they just started dropping off like flies.
Yeah.
Have you seen that yourself?
I think, yeah, I've been in a very similar place. I think it's basically balancing consuming and creation, right? So if you are consuming a lot, whether it's books or blog posts or podcasts, it tends to reduce your ability to create, and not in a bad way. Like I think it's helpful to have time where you're consuming and getting new ideas and new inspiration, but then I think it does reduce your ability to create just because it kind of takes up some mental space, right? So I think that it does have that effect. And sometimes like if I've been a couple days without reading anything or watching anything or really like no input, that's when I get my most creative ideas and like good inspirations and I can actually like, you know, create a lot more, write a lot more. So yeah, I think that can kind of happen. Sometimes you need some downtime from consuming so you can create.
So what's your routine like, daily and weekly? Can you kind of go through that?
Yeah, of course. So what I like to do is kind of separate my days during the week between days where I'm doing focused work and days where I'm doing either more collaborative things or whether I'm doing interviews or team calls with my team or really anything that there's a lot more communication happening. And the reason I found that works really well for me is that I can have those focused days where I'm not getting interrupted and I can just kind of go deeper on something, whether that's writing a sales page or, you know, coming up with some ideas or doing something that kind of really needs that focus time. I mean, ideally, I like to have a whole day like that at least once a week, but sometimes twice a week is even better. And then in terms of my kind of more communication days, you know, that's where I do more delegating, more training, and just making sure everything's running, you know, well in the team. And, you know, my routine daily tends to be pretty simple. I wake up kind of fairly late, if you will, around 8 or 8:30. And then I have a really good breakfast with my husband. We work for a little bit. We have a team meeting, a daily team meeting, like a little scrum that we do. So everybody shares what they're working on. We talk about the stats and the sales of the company every day. And then if anybody has questions or something that's blocking them. And then after that, we work a little bit more, have lunch, and in the afternoon, you know, depending on what kind of day it is, I'll either have meetings or more kind of focused time. And then usually in the summer, we'll go swimming and then have dinner and just kind of chill, relax, read some books or, you know, go for a walk or do some kind of movement in the evenings like that. So that's kind of what my days are looking like these days. And then, you know, every now and then there's kind of travel thrown into that. So if I'm speaking at a conference or we're holding an event or doing something like that, then there's kind of 2 or 3 days where a lot of that stuff happens.
How do you and your husband handle working with each other so much?
Yeah, so we're like together all the time. And it is balancing, you know, being a couple and being kind of professionals. So, you know, we do have, after a certain time of the day, we don't talk about business. So like after 6 or 6:30, we're definitely like off the clock. And even though sometimes, you know, we might have a question or we might want to talk about something, it's like, okay, we'll wait till tomorrow. And actually on the weekend, we also don't talk about business at all, which is really, really healthy. It's been probably like 4 or 5 months since we've implemented that, but it's been so good to not talk about business on the weekends. But yeah, we do. We've learned a lot about communication and how we both like to work. So we have different ways of communicating and different ways of doing things. And so just learning a lot more about how we process things. One of the things that we learned very early on was that we're both kind of like type A. It's not really aggressive, but kind of like, okay, this is what we have to do. And so we would kind of boss each other around, which was not working. So what we found was we instituted a rule that's the because rule. So instead of saying, you know, you need to do this, we would say, you know, we need to do this because, and then as long as we give a reason why something needs to happen, it gives that other person the context and it doesn't feel as much like an order. It's more like, hey, you know, this is happening, so we need to do this other thing. So that has softened our communication a little bit and made it much easier. But yeah, then just remembering that why we're in business and why we're doing this in the first place tends to like take us back a little bit from the more aggressive things that we can get stuck into or communication issues that we might get stuck in.
Do you think the aggressiveness came because you moved to Texas?
No, I don't think so. We were actually living in New York for the first, I would say, 6 or 7 months while we were working together. And the reason that we moved also was because in New York, in our apartment, it was so small that we were definitely in each other's space all the time. And that was even harder. So here we each have a separate office. We can close the door. And that's been really nice, too.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Which neighborhood did you live in?
We were in Brooklyn in Park Slope.
Oh, nice. So one of the nicer neighborhoods.
Yeah, it was great. It was right by the park. It was really nice. Nice old building. And yeah, it was full. It was really nice.
Yeah, when I seen your appointment booking, I was thinking, wow, she's pretty aggressive. Usually I don't have people coming on saying, I want to speak about this, this, and that, and this is what I work on. Like, I usually don't, which is cool. I mean, I really liked it, but it was just like, huh, this is different.
That's awesome. Well, I figured I might as well tell you, you know, what's on my mind and, you know, we can go from there.
Most people don't. That's why I thought it was pretty cool. Let's get back to the list building before we finish up. Yeah. When you approach different sites, so for example, someone has a podcasting website, someone has a small business website, someone has a membership site. How do you tackle the different sites when it comes to the way they're going to get the pop-ups and the list building methods for those?
Great question. Yeah, so I think that sometimes it takes experimentation and testing to see what's going to work best based on, you know, your marketplace and your audience and, you know, what they respond to. One of my favorite examples is a woman whose website is talkingshrimp.com, and her name is Laura Belgray, and she has a pop-up that says, don't hate on this cheesy pop-up. I've got some great, got some great content for you or something. And so the reason that she can use that in her pop-up is because people who go to her website are aware of pop-ups. They're probably marketers or like really savvy, you know, entrepreneurs or business owners. So they know the concept of the pop-up. And so she can kind of attack it head on and say, you know, I know pop-ups aren't the coolest, but here's something I have for you. And that might not work in every market, right? So if you're kind of in the fitness space or if you are, you know, in a more kind of spiritual marketplace or something, like people might not even know what a pop-up is. I mean, they might have seen it before, but they wouldn't think about it like that. So you probably want to be a little bit more direct and talk more about, you know, the value that you're creating with your opt-in or the thing that you're going to give them. So I think it's cool to really think about who are the people who are coming to your website, how savvy are they to what it is that you're offering, and then also taking a look at what your competitors are doing, not because you want to copy, but because you want to be different. And I think it's helpful to see, you know, what is it that might be annoying their visitors that they're doing that you could do differently. So the reason that we love Pop-Up Ally Pro is because it has some polite features, which means that you can prevent pop-ups from showing up in certain instances. boxes or completely suppress pop-ups if people are coming from your email list already. So that's kind of like treating your existing fans better so that you're not kind of annoying them all the time. So there's ways like that to really build in your opt-in sequences and kind of do all that so that it's really ideal for the people who are visiting your website. And then, you know, the other thing I like to experiment with is, let's say you have two different types of blog post categories, and I'm just using it as an example. But let's say you have a recipes category on your blog, and then you also have a fitness category, and you could have two different opt-ins based on what blog post this person is reading. They'll see one with a recipe book as an opt-in, or one with maybe like a workout video as an opt-in. And you can start to test based on, you know, what people are reading. Would they actually go for one more than the other? Or maybe it's very obvious that they would go for more recipes or more workout videos. So that's kind of getting more into the advanced testing that you can start to do with, you know, Pop-Up Ally and split testing and all that stuff. But I think it's cool to kind of take a step back from what you're working on and think about, you know, what are the problems that you can solve in these people's lives? And especially if you're doing any sort of SEO optimization on your website, you can kind of find out like what keywords are people typing in to get to your website and, you know, what pain points are they trying to solve, and then create your opt-ins according to that.
Interesting. So you can get two or three different blog posts on your website and each one have a very distinctive pop up, come up on that page.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. And you can do it on a blog post specific or a category. So if you have, you know, five categories of topics that you talk about, all the blog posts that are under those categories would get a different opt-in.
Very cool. You also mentioned speaking at conferences. Tell me, what's your favorite conference ever and why?
Ever? Oh, wow. That's a good question. Let me see. I haven't been for the last year or two, but I really liked World Domination Summit. I think it's a really fun, different crowd. The speakers are always really inspiring, and I think that one was really, really good. I've also really liked, you know, I just went to a conference in Aruba that actually it was the keynote speaker, and it was called ATEC for Aruba Tech. And it was their first year doing the conference. And that, I have to say, was pretty awesome, because going to Aruba for a conference, you really can't beat that. And the speakers were also amazing. Lots of people from New York and Canada and, you know, Silicon Valley and all these different kind of startup kind of space people were really awesome too. It was a little bit different crowd than I was used to. So I think that was really great too. I can't pick just one. there are too many good ones. Yeah.
Which World Domination Summit did you go to? Which year?
I definitely went in 2012, maybe in 2013. I definitely went more than once, but I can't really recall the exact year. So I think 2012 and 2013 were the ones I went to.
It was so good that you can't remember.
Why is this so good?
Cool. Natalie, if people want to find you and reach out to you, where should they go?
There's a couple places. One is, we talked about the 30-day list building challenge. So 30daylistbuildingchallenge.com. Totally free to sign up. You already know that there's an option to unlock it if you want to, but no pressure. And so that's the one place. The other place they can go for the podcast is natalielucier.com. The podcast is called Off the Charts Business Podcast. So definitely check that out. And then ambitionally.com is where we've got all of our plugins with Pop-Up Ally, Access Ally, Webinar Ally coming out next week. So we're pretty excited about that too.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review in iTunes, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.